Hello, I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21 and Enfield Voices, and I'd like to welcome you to this podcast today. This is one of the many podcasts that we do that look at major issues. And this is a rather special one because we're going to interview Ferial Clark today, and she's the MP for Enfield North, a fairly new MP. She only got elected in December, and we're going to talk to her about how she's coping with this pandemic in terms of her job and how it affects her and how it might make her rethink some things about what Parliament does. And I think it will be really, really interesting. So thank you for joining us, Ferial, and it's great that you're here. Maybe I could ask you a rather silly question because I'm sure lots of people know you, but for those who don't, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself before you were an MP.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for inviting me tonight, Francis. I really appreciate it. I'm relatively new to Parliament, having been elected in December. But prior to that, I used to be a councillor in a neighbouring borough in North London, where I was the deputy mayor, deputy leader. And I was also the cabinet member for health and social care. But prior to that, I had spent 8 years as the lead member on transport and environment, and had done a lot of campaigning on environment and sustainable transport, not just in for North London, but London wide. I served on the London Councils, which is a body that brings together all of the London boroughs. So I was the vice chair of the Transport and Environment Committee there for a number of years. I spent 14 years in local government before I stood for Parliament. But I was a full-time councillor for 10 years, but I was also, in 2006, when I first got elected, I was still working as a biomedical scientist. So my background is actually in pathology. I moved from NHS into local government into now Parliament.
Okay, so it seems like you've led several lives already. And now you're in Parliament, and you know, you went into Parliament in the beginning of this year. What was your feeling when you first went in? I mean, was it like Winston Churchill, you were overcome with the awe and the theatre of the place? Or was it like one of your predecessors, Nick Dubois, who thought after 2 weeks, oh my God, I've made the biggest mistake of my life, I can't influence anything here? How did you feel?
I think, honestly, I was, some parts of it were quite overwhelming. I think you can't help but be overwhelmed by the, you know, the historic building, walking through those corridors, and you know, going into the chamber. It is a fantastic and amazing place. So I found that part quite overwhelming. I found it can be an incredibly lonely place. Because everyone's patch, everyone's area is completely different. Whilst you are a part of a political party and you have maybe, you know, one joint meeting once a week, everyone's in different parts of the palace. So my where I am, well, we didn't have an office to start off with for the first month. So about 26 of us were sharing this tiny room. We used to take turns and going onto the computers until they sorted out our offices. But you can spend your time just in your office and not seeing anyone else. So it can be lonely. And so you have to make a real effort to go out there and to speak to other MPs. And if you didn't go into the tea room and didn't bump into MPs, members of the opposition parties, the only time you'll see them possibly will be in the chamber, where is that whole theatrical, you know, the theatre where everyone's shouting and jeering. So I made a real effort to speak to people, because I'm a sociable person, I like talking to people. So whether it was members of the Tory party or Lib Dems, SNPs, I tried to make to try to speak to people, get to know people, really. To, because I think if you don't get to know people, it's really difficult to understand a place. And Parliament had been, prior to me going in there, it'd been a very weird Parliament, 5 years of just, 4 years of just Brexit. So it'd been an odd Parliament. So I made the effort to get to know people. I made sure I got my, so the way it works, if you don't, you know, you have to get your maiden speech done before you can speak in a debate or ask a question. So I was very keen to get my speech done. And once I got my speech done, I felt quite overwhelmed, like being able to stand up and to talk and represent the issues in Enfield. I felt quite overwhelmed actually about that. I don't know, you know, how much difference that will make. Is that's another thing, but it's different to be in, you know, where in an environment where I was in, you know, as a councillor in a local authority where we were in control. Yes. So it's very different to that.
I actually remember you turning up to a meeting on community safety on the day you made your maiden speech, which I thought was absolutely amazing, because most MPs stick around to hear what other MPs think of their maiden speech, but you came up. You said you were lonely, but you could never have imagined that 3 months down the line you were going to be even more lonely because you were going to be locked down because of the COVID-19 crisis. Now, when that hit you, you know, you've just come into Parliament, you wanted to engage, you wanted to meet, know all these MPs, and suddenly this hit you. How did you react to that? How did you feel about that?
It's been incredible. It's been a bizarre experience because so we went into Parliament. We had a week and a half after that, it was Christmas holidays. So, you know, managed to put my bag down, pick up a pass, get my maiden speech out of the way. I did it in January actually. I didn't even have an office. And then January, when we came back, we had quite a lot of Brexit votes, so the European Withdrawal Bill votes, and there was another recess. And before I could, you know, I was in the process of setting up my office. So I was in the process of like recruiting caseworkers, researchers, and office manager. I was trying to set up my office and order equipment. Before I could complete that, we went into lockdown. So I had my caseworkers and my team, most of my team in place, but majority of my team hadn't actually worked together. They hadn't seen each other in real life. So they ended up, they're working virtually now. It's very lonely. But the, you know, you have to really quickly adapt. So normally what you would do as a new MP, you would, once you get elected, you will spend some time going around, meeting the organizations, getting your name, you know, get yourself introduced to schools and, to like, you know, charities, and you get to, you know, then you start working on issues, and after a couple of surgeries, it was really difficult in that you were dealing with issues. I mean, I would say the kind of issues that I was dealing with before the pandemic and since the pandemic have completely changed. But it is a much lonelier world. You don't only have yourself and to think about, but you have a team of people who are having to deal with some really complex and really sad and some really, you know, really scary issues. And I do, you know, I have to constantly think about their well-being as well. And it's trying to work as a team as well. It's definitely been a weird period of Parliament. A weird time to go into Parliament, well,
I'm sure it has. But I was going to ask you about what you were just talking about, your casework. I mean, you know, casework is a lot more important now than it was three decades ago for an MP, and they get a lot more done. Now, you know, how do you do your casework when you can't see people face to face? And you said it's changed a lot too because of the pandemic. Maybe you could tell us how it's changed.
Yeah, so I feel really sad that I can't meet my constituent face to face and pick up their casework. So at the moment I'm picking up casework so people can call and leave a message. We'll pick it up via that, or they can email us. And you know, there's the odd casework over Twitter that I pick up as well, that I deal with, and when someone's not, you know, if they've not emailed us. But you know, so we had quite a lot of, you know, it was a lot of, say, domestic housing issues, there was some benefits issues that I was dealing with, but it's just it was very varied. So it will be repairs, it will be damp, it will be, you know, it will be overcrowding. Those are the kind of cases that I was dealing with that made up quite a chunk of my casework the first couple of weeks, well, the first 4 or 5 weeks I was an MP. But with COVID, so many people have been affected, whether they have been they've been furloughed, or they've had to go on to benefits, and whether there are businesses, whether they're self-employed. So imagine, you know, we have thousands of people who are self-employed in Enfield, who, when the first, you know, when the Chancellor announced his financial package, weren't covered by the financial offer. So, but that has changed since. But so so you've got a lot of and people who needed immediate help, because it's, if you can't, you know, if you can't operate a business, there's no money coming in. You've got, you know, they've got families. You can, not so much the mortgage or the rents, that was, you know, that you could resolve that, but being able to buy food. But also people who were shielding, who, for whatever reason, the government's databases didn't work and weren't getting, they hadn't been received their shielding letters. So either been pressured into going to work or weren't able to, you know, the simple things like early days, people who were severely ill, who were clinically vulnerable, who hadn't received their shielding letter, were not able to get a priority slot with the food delivery, with the supermarket. So, you know, emailing, you know, supermarkets on a daily basis, a number of times trying to get them. And it's true, you know, and it's, you're constantly pushing them, because you, without that, you know, that piece of paper, that email from government saying you are shielded, they weren't able to, you know, they were still vulnerable. They were still, like, either, you know, I don't know, receiving chemo or had a real serious illness that meant that couldn't go out. So it's been more about the impact. The casework has been about people who were severely impacted as a result of the pandemic. So that's businesses, that's employees, that's vulnerable people. And I've even had a couple of emails from students, young students, who are worried about predictive grades, who feel that it is, I mean, my heart goes out to them. I mean, I was the kind of person who was just very much better at doing, I did really well last minute in exams, and, you know, sometimes maybe my predictive grades wouldn't have been as good as what I got at the end. So you've got, there are lots of, it's a variety of issues, but so, definitely, yeah, the nature has changed and the volume has absolutely changed.
Well, you've got a team. We've obviously got to know each other pretty well and having to respond. But what about your work in Parliament? I mean, you were elected there to scrutinise, to legislate. I mean, you're not in government, but there's private members' bills, 10-minute rules, and so on. How do you cope with that? Because you can't do that anymore. I mean, the scrutiny function seems to have gone. The legislative function too has been sort of diminished. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, so In terms of, so I still try to, so I'll come back to Parliament in a second. So in terms of my constituency work and my meetings with whether it's the police, whether it's the NHS, whether it's the local authority, so I'm still doing those meetings and holding those organisations and authorities to account over Zoom meetings. So that's that we very quickly established that. But Parliament was a little slow in adapting to our new circumstances. So we, the party, as you remember, France's Parliament went into recess a week earlier. So we had recess coming up, April recess. So we went into recess a week earlier, and it gave Parliament an extra week, so it was about 3 weeks to prepare. So we weren't able to go in. My staff weren't able to go in. They were having to, I was, they were having to work from their own personal equipment for a number of weeks. But Parliament did finally adapt. We were able to vote on issues on legislation. So they finally managed to put online, they established online voting. We were able, they very quickly established the select committee. So the committees where you hold authorities, the ministers to account, it's a scrutiny function, serves as a scrutiny function. So those committees were very quickly established, and they were having their meetings via Zoom and Teams. And that seems to be working really well. And then my only contention, the only part that I've not been very happy with is the way that the Parliament operates. So to be able to take part, so in when I was in Parliament, I before the lockdown, from say I guess it was like last, well it was, we didn't do very much, so there wasn't very much sitting in December, but from January to the point we shut down in March, I'd spoken 8 times. But since the lockdown and the new regime, I've only managed to ask 2 questions, and that is because of the system that has been set up. So you
Well, I
have
was going to
to
ask you about that actually. That I mean, you say you spoke 8 times. You were there. We saw you on the television, and before you were elected, when Brexit was on, we saw MPs on all the time. It was exhausting people, and now you see them hardly at all. Do you ever think that people might think we can do without you?
No, I think you still, there are still issues and matters that that need to be dealt with at like we still need to legislate. We still, there is still, I think there is whether there are still issues that only your member of parliament and consult can resolve, and there are still legislation being passed as issues being dealt with. My only contention is that, so I've had to adapt the way I work. So whilst I might not be selected to speak, so once upon a time I would just turn up and sit in the chamber, and I was, and then there is a hierarchy. If you're a chair of a committee, select committee, or if you're a former minister for that specific area, you will always be prioritized over newbies like myself. But I was happy to sit till midnight to wait for my turn, because I was willing to, was willing to wait for Enfield. So I did do that. But now, because of slim down operation, the debate times are shorter. You have to enter a ballot. It's a bit like a lottery, a shuffle. If you get selected, and then there's an order that you're put into. And I've not been, and because my other, there are many new MPs who've not got to speak at all, so they get prioritised over me because I've managed to speak before. But as I said, that doesn't mean I'm not still pushing my points. I submit written questions to the ministers to get a response. I write to them, and I've written hundreds of emails, letters to ministers, because as I said, the casework as load has very much been high. But it was, and the like everyone else in the country, Parliament had finally managed to change and adapt, and we were able to vote online. as it was recorded. I'm not saying it's something that we should do going forward all the time, but it was available. So, and as the government had said, you know, if you can work from home, you should.
So, you know, you say, you know, it's changed a lot, but has it made you think, and other MPs think, maybe you don't contact other MPs as much as you used to, but has it made you rethink what Parliament should do? Has it made you think it's a bit old-fashioned and online voting is probably the way to do it now, and some of the traditions have to go, that you can work in a different way, you've shown that you can? Has that made you think about changing Parliament, reforming Parliament?
Oh, I certainly think a lot of resistance that was in Parliament, I hear about. I mean, don't forget, I'm new, but from what I hear, from what I've spoken to colleagues about, there is resistance to change. And I think this has forced the Parliament and a lot of people who are quite traditionalist, has made them think that it can work without. I think it's all about there are beautiful traditions in a parliament, and I think quite a lot of them are nice, and should be kept, and the way the parliament operates, the way I always find the interventions quite interesting, the way you have to like lift your hand up and point to your right honourable member before, you know, there are lots of traditions, there are lots of ways, and you have to answer. There are lots of traditions. I think you absolutely, it makes the parliament, you know, the British Parliament, and we should absolutely be kept. But absolutely, I think the being forced into working in different way would mean that Parliament will have to be less resistant to change. I was very upset that I was quite happy to go back to Parliament. I mean, it's a bit pointless if you ask me, because I go to Parliament, even if I'm not selected, I sit there and do my meetings from my office on my own and then come back home, whereas I can still be doing that work at home and not lose the hour and 2 hours I run back there and there and back. But it did mean that quite a lot of MPs who were shielding, who have underlying conditions, or who were looking after vulnerable partners, or they were carers, were not able to take part. And I think, in you know, whilst we have apps, we have shown that we can work remotely, that we can vote remotely. To say that they couldn't, I mean, the government did then the following day change its mind and did make that offer. But it's still not good enough. It's still a proxy vote as opposed to just being able to vote online.
They might now have to remake the play, this house that was made during the time of, you know, the Callaghan government, which looked at the Whip's office. And if we did it in time of the COVID-19 crisis, it would be a very different play. I mean, have you felt that because COVID has taken over so much, that some major, major issues, social care, climate change, transition to the EU and so on, has taken a back seat and that suffered? And maybe Black Lives Matter issue, George Floyd's death, has made people realise that the world is still out there with all its problems.
I certainly believe that COVID has highlighted the impact of 10 years of austerity. It absolutely has. I think we, you know, realizing who actually makes this country work, who makes the, you know, the biggest sacrifices. I think it's shown a light on a huge section of our society that we've all far too often completely forgotten, and not appreciated. So our social workers. And I think it has, I think some of the, I personally, and I hope it will be, I don't think the government can go forward continuing to ignore the need in our public services. So the need to completely transform social care, and the fact that social workers are paid not paid a fair wage in most cases. I think it has highlighted the inequality in our society. You look at the buses. So like those who can work from home are working, which is great. But when you look at the buses in the morning, the buses are still packed in the morning with people who are going out to, who are care workers, who are security guards, who are caretakers, people who are still working in the front lines and are still having to work during this pandemic, bus drivers. So I think it has highlighted the inequalities. And I think when, you know, people losing their jobs, I mean, I know my own husband has had to take a pay cut, but it's minimal. So, you know, him having to take 20% pay cut, it doesn't affect our family that much. But there are people who've been furloughed, people who weren't, there were people in society, in our society, who weren't eligible for sick pay. That was the issue. I think, yes, and I think, so that it has highlighted issues within our society. And hopefully government will take notice of it, but it's highlighted the inequalities. And I think Black Lives Matters movement at the moment is also shining a light on, because what we've also seen is that throughout this pandemic, we've seen which part of our society, which part of our community is worst off, who's affected the most. And looking, seeing the report that came out from Public Health England, which shows that Black, Asian, minority ethnic people are most affected than the wider community, is something. And Black Lives Matter has highlighted that, you know, we have issues in our society with the criminal justice system, with the education system, and it's with the employment system, with the way that society and economy works. So we have a lot of work to do after this, when coming out of this.
But do you feel, I mean, you got at the position of PPS, didn't you, Private Parliamentary Secretary, and part of that job is to keep, you know, your minister in touch with backbench opinion. I mean, in listening to other MPs and so on, because of the COVID crisis, because of Black Lives Matter, do you sense that there's a sort of real change of attitude going on? I mean, I sense it out there in the country, I sense it on social networks, but do you sense it that it's also happening in Parliament?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. In my time, so being in the queue, waiting for 46 minutes, a couple of times to vote, you get to speak to MPs from other political parties. And most MPs, I would say, from Labour to Tory to Lib Dem to SNP to Plaid, I think all are experienced, are seeing the same sort of, they're getting the same casework through. But seeing the same sort of issues in their constituencies. So I think, I mean, it was quite disappointing. I mean, yes, even my Tory colleagues, I would say, are seeing and feeling the same issues. But whether they act on them is another matter, because as you saw from the queuing that we had to do for the vote, you had a huge number of Conservative MPs who were making videos saying how awful it was, but went into the lobby and then voted for it. So I just, you know, my worry is, yes, people are seeing the inequalities in our society. Yes, they're seeing the tension, the sensitivities, and the need out there in the community. Whether they will act on it, whether the Tory MPs will act on it, and ultimately they are in government. That's another question.
Oh dear, the sins of party discipline, yes, I know. I mean, the sort of situation we're in now may become common. I mean, we may now be living in a time of perpetual crisis. We could have more pandemics because there's a lack of biodiversity. There's climate change. It's going to get worse and worse. Do you think that that's going to change things? People are going to realize and be more ready for that. And this crisis has partly prepared us for that, including preparing MPs and the House of Commons.
Yes, and I think this also, we need to use this, we need to ensure that coming out of the crisis, we use this as an opportunity to do more to tackle the climate change. I've heard lots of colleagues and lots of organizations and charities talking about building green, building sustainable. So it's about how do you get out of this the crisis. So with mass unemployment, with there's a lot, the way the shape of the economy will completely change. And it's how do you use this as an opportunity to build better, to build greener. And I think government missed an opportunity which some other European countries have adopted, which is when you're handing out public cash to major corporations, major companies, it's to attach conditions to that, to force, for example, I mentioned, the one I've got on top of my mind is aviation industry. If you are going to support aviation industry, it's can you attach conditions to it? If you're going to bail them out, can you attach conditions to it? So they do start using, whether it's cleaner fuels, better technology, changing the way they operate, so they are having less impact on the environment, but also looking at what kind of jobs we create going forward. We have, as you hear in the news every day, that thousands of people are losing their jobs. It's how do you know what are the industries that the government that it's not the £32 billion that the government are putting into building roads, which isn't going to do anything good for the environment. So we need to think about how we build better, how we build greener, and how we use this as an opportunity to do more to improve our environment, tackle climate change.
Okay, well, we're getting sort of close to the end of, gone over our half hour, but that's okay, that's fine. But just a couple more questions. I mean, how do you see your future life as an MP as a result of what we've been through now?
What I know for sure is that soon as the lockdown is lifted, I just want to spend time in Enfield with the organisations. So I managed to go and visit Age UK in Enfield, and I did some deliveries. But now that I'm going into Parliament, potentially coming into contact, with 600 people who may or may not have COVID, so I've stopped doing the doorstep deliveries because I don't want to put anyone at risk. But I do miss. I'm a very much a people's person, and I like engaging, and I like going to meetings. I like meeting people, and I want to do. So that's the bit I am looking forward to doing more of. I want to be on the ground. I have no idea, to be honest with you, Francis. I think there's a lot of work, and it's not a nice way environment to work, the way we're having to work. So I'm looking forward to having an office where people can come and speak to me when they need to. I'm looking forward to being on the ground in Enfield myself. And then let's see how it goes. I just hope this doesn't go on for too long.
Well, I mean, you certainly like communicating, and you've absolutely put one of our admin people in awe because of your newsletter. He thinks it's very comprehensive and very, very thorough. So you're finding new ways of doing things, which is really important. So let me ask you the final question, which I ask everyone. If anyone wanted to find more about what you're doing and get in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can call me. They can write to me. They can contact. They can follow me on Twitter, which is Ferial at Ferial Clark MP. They can find me on Facebook. So I do a weekly update about what I'm doing, what issues I'm working on, and I put that on Twitter. I put that on Facebook. I've just finally got getting my website up, so I'll be putting information on there. But you can register to receive my weekly update, my newsletters. But if you need to contact me about a person, about a casework, it's the best way to do it is to email me at ferial.clark.mp@parliament.uk. And the email address is on my Twitter page as well. But yeah, so at the moment, sadly, it's only via web or phone at the moment. And we can arrange Zoom meetings if need be.
Okay, you might get a deluge of people asking for Zoom meetings now. Okay, well, thanks for doing this, Ferial. I mean, it's been really interesting because, I mean, you not only told us about how you're coping with the COVID-19 crisis, but you've told people a bit about your work, and you still have the enthusiasm of a new MP, and I hope you never lose that, because that's a very important thing to keep. So, you know, thank you for doing it and for taking your time, and I hope we do this again sometime later in the year if we can.
Absolutely, my pleasure. I look forward to it, and to all the other amazing organizations out there in Enfield as well. If you need to reach me, if you want me to come on your show, I might try. So there are lots of organizations doing fantastic work, and I'm not managing to reach out to them at the moment, but post this COVID, I will go out. And I, you know, thank you very much to everyone in Enfield who have come together so well. It's been amazing. It's been really, really heartening the way that Enfield is working to support each other. And thank you so much, Francis, for giving me this opportunity as well.
Okay, well, thank you. It's been an interesting, interview, and I hope people do contact you. Well, I'm sure they will. Anyhow, we'll leave this now and then talk to you again another time. So let's end this interview now.